Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on The Lawrence Holmes Show.
If you've been listening to this show for the last few weeks, I've asked a question that hasn't really gotten an answer. What's wrong with your offense, Matt Nagy? Everyone assumed that the thing that was wrong with the offense was the guy who was playing quarterback, that it was on Trubisky. And look, there's enough evidence to tell you that Mitch is not great. There's enough and I'm not here to tell you that he should be the quarterback. I'm not here to tell you that they should make a change. What I'm here to tell you is none of this stuff matters if the head coach doesn't have the creativity and the conviction to do things better. There's a lot of talk about, well, we have to get into the details and all of these things that we're hearing from Matt Nagy. Maybe he's trying to figure out the whys. I was talking with one of the reporters this morning that Matt Nagy's always trying to figure out the whys. Maybe the why is in the mirror.
Make me a bicycle, clown!
Welcome in. My name is Lawrence Holmes. I'm here with you until 2 o'clock. There's a lot going on, and we're going to try to keep you updated. There's breaking news going on in the Big Ten where kind of their worst nightmare is being realized. We're going to talk with our buddy Jeremy Warner about that coming up at 12:40. Cole Wright's going to join me at 1 o'clock. We're going to have Cole on every Wednesday at 1, and we're going to talk NFL and Bears with him because he's hosting a Bears show over on Marquee. He used to host over at NFL Network. And quite honestly, I just like talking with the dude. So we're going to talk with him coming up at 1 o'clock. I didn't really, we had a couple calls yesterday, but I would like to get a couple more. If you do want to talk about the Bears, 312-644-6767 is the number. You can also text us if you want to the Rosen Hyundai text zone. I'm almost did the old number. 312-644-6767 is the number that you can text there. If you're out there on Twitch, I am wearing my XRT t-shirt, my favorite XRT t-shirt, and you can check it out at twitch.tv/Chicago670thescore. Dan and Layla kind of clean up in the studio as I'm able to watch them, which is super creepy. All right, so I'm going to stop doing that, and I'm going to get back to talking about this show. I also would like to talk about what happened at the World Series last night and how I went from being in love and a romantic baseball fan to just being slapped right in the face with the realities of some of the ineptness of MLB. It was right there for us last night. I also want you to get in on talking about the Bears, and I was listening to Matt Nagy yesterday, and there's news out of House Hall now. It doesn't look like at this point that Cody Whitehair is going to be available for the Bears right as it stands right now. Like, he's on the struggle bus as far as injuries go. Allen Robinson is in the concussion protocol, and maybe that's why we didn't see him get as many opportunities as we would have liked for him to see last week, but now the injuries are added on to some of the issues that the Bears have had as an offense. And it adds another layer of things that we need to talk about when it comes to this team. I want to ask you about that because yesterday, look, we were breaking it down. That's what we do the day after a game is over. But I want to ask you a specific question about the Bears as it relates to Monday night's game. And that question is, how did Monday change the way that you feel about this schedule, this record, and this team? Because I think that even begrudgingly, a lot of Bears fans were like, yeah, they're flawed. I can see the flaws from here, but they are 5-1, and their defenses play good enough where they have put themselves in a position to win some of these close games, and they've done it. Well, now they end up losing and getting blown out in a game. And now I wonder, when you saw it on display, all those things that scared you about this team, how that changed the way it you look at them right now. 312-644-6767 is the number if you would like to jump in on that. Now that the World Series is over, the White Sox can start looking at hiring a manager, and that whole thing is going to be interesting. They can also, if they're, my belief on this has been that the only reason that you're hearing so much talk about Tony La Russa is that you kind of can't hire anybody, and you have two guys that were still being punished that are probably on your list. Plus, La Russa is tight with Jerry Reinsdorf, so it makes sense that they would want to pick his brain. But now that all of that stuff is over, I would expect there to be more names that emerge. I would honestly be surprised if more names don't emerge in this managerial search for the White Sox. So there's a lot to discuss, a lot that we have to get to. But I wanted to make it a point today to take calls and bring people in. 312-644-6767 out to Rogers Park and Jeff. Hey, Jeff, you're on the Score.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. How y'all doing?
We're good.
Wanted to touch on Monday night's game, Lawrence. I'm concerned about the coach, as many of us are. What do you think about, because of the statement that he made yesterday about not considering handing the play calling duties to one of his coordinators, even just to try it out for a couple of weeks? Nobody's saying that he could never call plays again, but just give it to one of the other coordinators and be a different voice in the ear of the quarterback and see what that could bring. And I'm wondering about morale in the locker room, especially with the defense, when they hear their coach saying, hey, I don't think that the play calling duties is something that we need to address right now. You know, I wonder what type of message that they're sending with the rest of the players, because those guys, they hear that and they see that and they have feelings too. When they, you know, the defense is constantly putting you in a position to win the game and things like that, and the offense is kind of going the opposite direction.
Jeff, I appreciate the phone call. A couple things. One, let's not let the defense just skate with their responsibility in Monday night's loss. They were not good on Monday. And their run defense all throughout the year has not been what you would expect. I do think that you've hit on something that quite honestly is interesting to me. Those guys are all supposed to be evaluating what it is they do, how hard they work, what they do right, what they do wrong on game day. Is the coach, is that not a thing that he has to do? Is he absolved of any blame? Has he really dug deep into whether or not it makes more sense? I'm glad you brought it up, because in the next segment, I'm going to actually share that comment that Nagy had to say about his offense, okay? So please stick around for that, because I do want you to hear it. Let's talk with Devon on the South Side. Hey, Devon, you're on the Score.
Hey, Lawrence, man, just want to say I'm a big fan, love the show.
Thanks, man, I appreciate that.
Yeah, real quick, that's just a couple of points I want to make. First off, the Bears are absolutely lucky to only be 5-2. Let's just start there. The next thing is the offense can't put up points at all. Your defense has to score for you, and that's a problem, especially considering the fact that you brought Nick Foles here because he was supposed to be the savior to what Nagy's program is supposed to be. And he made Trubisky look like, yeah, I'd rather just stuck with him. So those are the two things I really just wanted to say, but again, I love the show.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you jumping in, and I'm glad you brought Mitch's name up. It's like you guys are on point today. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, you're going to hear what Matt Nagy had to say about play calling and Mitch and whether or not it makes sense to go back to 10. There were some really good questions asked of Matt Nagy yesterday, and you're going to hear it next here on the
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Score.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
What I would have liked to see, I play beside a guy in Tommy Harris, and this is as close as I can come to an Aaron Donald, but seeing him on a day-to-day basis. Tommy Harris, and I would think our defensive line was fast, and that's what we get up the field and we run. The way you neutralize that is you run draw plays and you run screen plays. I didn't see a screen play until like the third quarter. And that's what kind of bothered me, because for a team that gets up the field like the Rams did or do, why wouldn't you run more of that early on in the game, especially to get the ball out of your quarterback hands? One, and you try to tire those guys out a little bit.
I agree with Alex Brown, and he talked with Danny Parkins and Layla Rahimi and Matt Spiegel yesterday on The Score about it. I agree with him that that would be a wonderful way to try and slow down a pass rush and a player that's aggressive like Aaron Donald, and it's what the 49ers did a couple of weeks ago. Here's the problem. The Bears are bad at running screen plays. And the screenplay that Alex is talking about didn't succeed because they don't run them very well. So I'm not sure that that's something that they could even go to. Although at this point, things are getting limited on what can be done with this offense, which is where I wanted to go. And I know there are people that are holding on the line. Hang on. I want you to react to what you're getting ready to hear, along with the question that I threw out on how Monday night has changed the way that you think about the Bears overall. So I went back and listened to the press conference from yesterday, because it happened while we were doing the show yesterday. I went back and listened to it, and there's a couple minute chunk where I think there are some really good questions of Matt Nagy that I want you to hear, and they all have to do with the things that you care about. You'll hear him talk about overall offensive scheme and game planning and how that can be tweaked. You will hear him address the issue of Mitch, and I think in an interestingly dismissive way. And where it starts is our guy Chris Emma asked him about the idea of maybe abdicating play calling. Check out what Matt Nagy had to say.
That's the very first thing that I look at, is that. And so I talked to our coaches, and we talked through that whole process, and I'm really honestly not opposed to there's no opposition from me if we feel like that's what the issue is. And so we look at that right now where we're at. That's not where we think it's at, but at the same point in time, I'll always continue each week to look at it. I mean, I'll say this too. When you're in a little bit of a rut, like we are, right now, you have to look at everything. And sometimes, even if it's just a little bit of a change somewhere too, you have to be able to do that. No one here, coach and or player, has too big of an ego to think that it's not them, right, as a player or a coach. So we talk through those kind of decisions, and we just keep evaluating and rolling and seeing where we're at.
Specifically to your point about when it's hard to play quarterback, when it's hard to play tackle, and that situation you're facing right now, it would seem that one solid or potential answer to that is to get a more mobile quarterback, to have some athleticism back there. And I'm wondering if you're not at the point where you don't have to at least look at the possibility of giving Mitch another chance.
Yeah, no, I think you could look at that a bunch of different ways. I mean, there's when you say that in regards to a mobile quarterback, I'm not so sure that that's the answer with that, with what we're talking about with the drop back of a quarterback and the tackle situation. We have a lot of confidence, and I have a lot of confidence in Nick right now with where he's at. Again, this is a process for us to work through, and it's not just one person. It's really not. And we think that I know from yesterday, decision making wise and where he's at, I thought he did a good job. I thought he made some good throws. He missed a couple as well. But there's you know, again, it's a team sport, and so there's other reasons for some of that as well. So we just keep rolling through that and working through it.
Hey, Matt, when you went back and looked at the interception in the end zone, what was your assessment of the play design and the execution of that?
Yeah, well, the play design, before you see the play, you like it, right? It's something that we talked about that we liked. You know, it's an ability for us to get on the edge with Nick and you know, maybe have a receiver to throw it to. They played pretty good defense down there, and in that situation, when they do cover it like that, Nick would be the first to tell you just either throw it either further in the back corner of the end zone or just throw the ball away and live to see the next down, you know. And so that's a part of the game, and that would be one of the decisions, Colleen, that I would say that he would want back.
On a lot of Foles misses, it seems like a pressure is the biggest issue, and it's just a hair off, like on the play to Mooney down the sideline. Yeah. So my question, how can you give him more time? And I'm not talking about just blocking better. I'm talking about, is there anything you can change in your scheme that just makes protecting the quarterback the ultimate priority of this offense? Because that seems to be the one thing that's keeping Foles from making plays that I think you expect him to make.
Yeah, no, there is. There's a lot of ways schematically, and that's where, for us, we have that. Those are in there. It's just some of those don't happen. Like at that point in time, that happened to be a five-man scat protection. It just wasn't one of those. But we have those all over our playbook, you know, to be able to help out our offensive linemen in situations where maybe they're sliding to a gap or to an area and they're not on a man-to-man, you know. So, for sure, no, you have to be able to do that. Now, when you do that, you lose – a lot of times you'll lose some type of receiver, whether it's a tight end or wide receiver. You lose an element of a receiver in that when you use an extra guy to protect. So that's kind of weighing some of that out. But absolutely, you can do that, and we have that in our playbook to be able to do that.
I thought those were some really good questions that were asked. You have Colin Kane in there. You have Hub in there. It was interesting to me that, no, we're not thinking anything about going back to Mitch. When it does seem like Foles' lack of mobility is an issue, it's not the biggest issue because he's getting pressured 50% of the time. At least that's what happened in Monday night's game against the Rams. He was pressured 50% of his dropbacks, and that's not going to function for damn near any quarterback. Maybe Michael Vick in his prime could have made a defense pay for that. But with what you're trying to do, moving the ball down the field through the air, I don't think it's going to play out very well. So I wanted you to hear that. I wanted you to hear him talking about not giving up play calling. And one of the things I said with Dan and Layla is I think that while Matt is very earnest in discussing these things, I don't think that he's just completely ignoring it. I do think that he is throwing it open to his staff. Guys, do you think that maybe we should look into doing more about this? The problem is that those guys work for him. And I'm not sure that it's easy for them to tell him the truth. If you look at what happened with Mark Helfrich, he's not here anymore, is he? And there were times when you would listen to Helfrich discussing Mitch and the offense that he seemed like the most honest person up there. And then poof, he was gone. I think it's a difficult thing for leaders to be humble enough to listen to people who have a dissenting opinion. And when you reach the level of coach that Matt Nagy is, that's a hard thing to get away from. So it's something that I want you to keep in mind whenever you hear him talking about giving up play calling, even though he has an example of the guy that he took over play calling for in Andy Reid. And Andy Reid didn't just completely abdicate it. He just figured out, well, there were ways for us to do it in a much more efficient way, or I could take a 30,000-foot view on what it is that we were doing as an offense. And I think it would benefit Matt Nagy to do so. Bill's on the score. Hey, Bill.
Hey, so I have a couple of thoughts for you. First of all, in reaction, I guess, to what you were asking, the reaction to all those clips we just heard, it feels like, and sometimes even looks like, Matt Nagy thinks he's playing Madden when it comes to play calling. Fourth and one and running a toss to the short side of the field is something I would do in Madden because that's where it works at. But against a real NFL defense, that doesn't even sound like a good idea. I think that there are a lot of people in Hallis Hall wearing that C on their helmet or on their chest that are afraid to tell Matt Nagy the truth, like you're saying. And I think there are even more people in there, in that building, that are afraid of admitting and accepting that this team is not as good as they think they are. The game on Monday night didn't particularly change how I feel about the Bears. What it did do was make me realize that all the feelings I thought I had after the first couple weeks of the season and seeing them not complete a full four quarters of football and being able to move the ball consistently and effectively, it makes me feel like all of those things are actually very accurate. What Monday showed me was not that this team is 5-2 now, but that this team is only really 5-2 because they played five teams or four teams, and then I think they had a good game against the Bucks, truthfully. But they played four teams that they're supposed to beat, and that when it comes time to play against teams that you're not necessarily supposed to beat, but that you have to play well in order to beat, they're going to be in some trouble.
And that could be this weekend. Bill, I appreciate the phone call. They take on the Saints this weekend, and Allen Robinson is in the concussion protocol, and it looks like your center and probably your best overall offensive lineman, Cody Whitehair, is not going to be available for this game. So you're already behind the eight ball when you're getting ready for that game. It's all a mess, and I promise you that we're going to get back to that discussion. There's also breaking news out of Wisconsin about a COVID outbreak that they have. Their coaches got COVID. Their 12 players, I think all of their quarterbacks have it, so that their game with Nebraska has been canceled. That's out. This is exactly what the Big Ten was worried about, and I want to talk with someone who covers the Big Ten about that, and we'll talk baseball as it pertains to this too. Jeremy Warner is going to join me in the next segment. Stick around. He's terrific. By the way, if you're watching on the Twitch screen, yes, during that soundbite, I got some crates and put them on my desk so I can stand up because I haven't done a show standing up in a really long time. So far, so good. You're probably a little closer to my face than you want to be, but that's all right. At least you can see my sweet XRT t-shirt that I'm rocking. Twitch.tv/Chicago670thescore. Back after this.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Still to go on this show, I've got some thoughts about the World Series and the aftermath of the World Series. I would like to get more of your phone calls about the Bears and how your feelings about them have changed because of Monday, but there's also a story that's going on locally that I think is important for us to discuss too. It's one of those things where before the show, Herbie and I are kind of going back and forth on, well, wait, there's a lot of Bear stuff we want to do today, and you want to talk about the World Series, and Cole's going to be on the show at 1 o'clock, but this story that's happening with Wisconsin deserves some time. So I said, can you call Jeremy Warner? Because the guy who runs Illini Inquirer, on top of being someone who knows everything that's going on with Illinois football, does a great job of covering the Big Ten. And it turns out he was in Madison covering that game. So he joins me now on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from out in Melrose Park, or you can go to alpamonteford.com. And if you're on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670thescore, Jeremy was nice enough to jump on the Twitch stream as well. Sir, as someone who covers the Big Ten as well as you do, when you started to hear the rumblings about the positive COVID test at Wisconsin, what were you first thinking?
Well, the first thing I saw, and Lawrence, thanks for having me on, is Graham Mertz tested positive almost immediately after that game. And, of course, he diced up Illinois, looked like the best Wisconsin quarterback potentially since Russell Wilson. And I immediately think, I'm covering Illinois. Did he play with COVID? Was he contagious with COVID while he played? How does that happen? Did the test he took before the game show a negative? And what's that mean for Illinois? And so far, you know, Lovie Smith told us earlier in the week that they had no new positive. The team spokesman told me this morning they have no new positive since then. We'll see what happens in the next coming days because we know there's an incubation period there. But again, Lovie Smith said today, our team is clean right now. So that's good news. But the bad news is that the Big Ten, for all its great protocols, for its delay and making sure that they're doing things safely, we have a pandemic raging in our country, a pandemic raging especially to our neighbors to the north in Wisconsin. Not that we're doing great in Illinois, but Wisconsin's really having a difficult time. And just because you have a football team doesn't mean they're not out in the real world. As much as they try to have a quasi-bubble, the University of Wisconsin's really struggling here with it. And that's got obviously gotten into their program. It's got their head coach now who has COVID, Paul Chris, and half their quarterback room or more than half their quarterback room has it. And you wonder how much it'll spread throughout the team and if Illinois eventually could see some positive tests. But so far, nothing from Illinois' end.
How stringent are the rules for a positive COVID player in the Big Ten?
So the Big Ten set their protocols, which are pretty stringent, to be honest with you. So they had this kind of tier of yellow, red, orange, and basically if five or six players on a team tested positive for COVID, they had to cancel a game. And those five or six players are put in quarantine, not for just 14 days. They're put in for 21 days. So that's three games at least of a season. So they could go through all this myocarditis screening, this heart screening to make sure that they're fully healthy to play. So for Wisconsin, this could jeopardize two or three games if they've had this big of an outbreak and really could jeopardize their entire season and the Big Ten season here. So that's why this is concerning, such a big outbreak already of 12, six staff members, six players, of why this should shut down maybe more than even one game. So they test daily antigen testing, PCR testing. I know PCR testing throughout the Big Ten is happening, but it's kind of a reminder, Lawrence, that the testing is not, it can tell us who has it and help us mitigate, but testing alone does not make sure players do not get this virus.
And this seems like a scenario that Kevin Warren was fearful of when the Big Ten decided that they weren't going to play. And there was a huge celebration when he relented and said, all right, well, we'll do this 9-game schedule thing in 9 weeks and try to make it happen. This feels like exactly what it was he was afraid would happen in the Big Ten.
I think he was mostly afraid that they didn't have the answers of what COVID did to people who caught it, to people, young athletes who could catch it. Myocarditis was a big issue they were really concerned about. We know the mortality rates of young people is low, but I think even he would say one person, dying from this as a student athlete would be way too many. And even if they have long-term effects of this. So that was his main thing. But the other part was pulling off a season. I think we all expected pulling off a season would be very difficult. And we've seen it with the SEC, with Florida, some of these other programs that have had games canceled. Houston has barely played any games in their conference. So we knew this could be ugly, but everyone else was saying, let's do it. Let's push ahead. And even though that might not have been the right thing to do with some of these other conferences, I think the Big Ten was smarter to make sure they had all the information. It did give them wiggle room for a season so that if they had to cancel a game, they had off weeks where they could make it up, right? They had 14 or 15 week period where they can get in a season. The Big Ten doesn't. The Big Ten has 9 weeks, 9 games, and now Wisconsin might be lucky to get 5 or 6 in with the way this thing is going. Maybe they can get more, but there's no wiggle room because the whole point of this was to make sure basically Ohio State would have a chance at the college football playoff. Wisconsin, maybe, but now that's obviously probably not going to happen. Michigan, maybe at this point, but it was really to make sure Ohio State could play. So I think Kevin Warren had the right idea of, you know, let's delay until we know everything about this virus. But then when you came back, you're on everybody else's schedule, and trying to get all these games in while pandemic has happened is going to be very difficult.
And even if we were to say that the guys were going to be fine, didn't the entire like quarterback room for Wisconsin get hit? Because let's say you wanted to soldier through all of this, there's no one to play quarterback for them, is there?
Yeah, and that's one question. The Big Ten, I don't know if they really had an answer of what's the point of when we shut off a game, like when we cancel a game. Is it a percentage of the team, and that's eventually what they went with? Or is it, hey, the whole offensive line room gets COVID or has to quarantine because of contact tracing? Do we cancel a game then, or do we soldier ahead and you have defensive linemen or linebackers playing offensive line? So Wisconsin paused team activities today, but based on their tests, and I'm sure they'll have follow-up tests and PCRs just to make sure that these are all positives and not false positives, but even with that, they don't have enough players by the Big Ten's own protocols. They have too many players testing positive and too many staff members testing positive to play a game at Nebraska this week.
I remember reading a couple of months ago that the University of Illinois was kind of on the forefront of some of the testing that's going on. What can you share about what it is that they're doing? And from what you've heard from people down there in Champaign, is there a point where they'll feel comfortable that their contact with Wisconsin didn't cause any infections on their team?
Yeah, so I think what Illinois has had, which a lot of Big Ten programs haven't had, is they've had daily testing. They've at the university itself, the school, they created this saliva-based testing, which is rapid, it's cheap. Now, there can be some false positives and maybe some false negatives as well, but it was quick turnaround, right? So if a normal person out there listening goes and gets a test, it might take 3 or 5 days to get a result back. And that really doesn't do us all that good, right? Because what are you doing in those 3 or 5 days? Can you isolate for 3 or 5 days before getting that test? So Illinois had this saliva-based testing, and they've used it on their athletic department and their professors and their students since June. So Illinois has been doing this for a long time. Now you add the PCR testing to that. So they get two daily tests per day, which does a great job of mitigating. Now, it doesn't mean Illinois hasn't had issues. 18 football players from June to August have tested positive. Some basketball players, according to Brad Underwood, had tested positive. Not sure how many, but it does allow them to immediately get those people into quarantine, keep them away, and keep the spread down. So Illinois has really done a great job of that. The university has done a great job of that. And just their testing capacity and their testing turnaround has been far better than every other Big Ten school. You can see some of these graphs, and Illinois tested tens of thousands of more tests than these other programs and these other universities.
Jeremy Warner is a really, really strong journalist, and you can check out the work that he does. Subscribe to Illini Inquirer. Just go to IlliniInquirer.com. Check him out on 24/7 Sports and CBSI as well. Jeremy, I always appreciate you being available to the show. Thanks for the incredible information.
Anytime. Thank you, Lawrence.
That's Jeremy Warner. We need to take a break. We're going to get that's a lot. Like, that is, while all of us are dealing with this, and I understand I'm talking about this in the context of sports, like, that is a lot for that university and for that football program to try and navigate, and the Big Ten overall to navigate. We are going to get back to talking about the Bears. Why? Because a guy who hosts a Bears postgame show is going to join. No, it's not me, because I don't do that anymore. But my man Cole does, and we're going to talk with him about the Bears next here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.